Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. All right, dead man walking here. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, conservative, lurking conservatives. Oh, you know who you are. What's going on, people? How's it going, Mark Riley?
It's going great. You know what today is?
The day that I snap on the air?
No.
What is it, Riley?
My 13th wedding anniversary.
Hey, you made it 13 years.
13 years.
That's unbelievable. Do you still have that? I was just talking to Brendan P.W. McDonald, who's officially married, as some of you know before the show, about marriage, but not really about marriage. You still have any of your wedding gifts that you still use?
I think so. Actually,
do you even know what they were, Riley?
I still use the pants I got married in to this day, because they're great pants.
Do you still use the pants you got married? Is that a
tuxedo pants?
Do they have a chastity belt or something? Are they special?
No, man, they're just great pants. The guy that made them for me, who passed away some years ago, just really made a fantastic pair of tuxedo pants.
Well, that's tremendous.
That makes me happy.
Brendan, he was just telling me that how excited it is that he's cooking on these pots and pans. That was the best thing about my first marriage, was that I got a set of all clad pots and pans that I continue to use to this day. And every time, I don't even look at them. They no longer represent that union to me, but they do represent the quality gifts that you can get when you get married. And if you stay married over a year, you get to keep them officially. You don't have to give them back.
Oh, God.
Is that the wrong way?
Is there a rule?
Well, I think I paid the karmic debt on that one, because when I got married this time, it was a small ceremony. It was in my backyard with 10 people. We didn't even ask for presents. I didn't get much gifts on the second wedding, which kind of pissed Mishna off a little bit. But nonetheless, it's better.
Yeah, because gifts make the wedding better. They make the marriage better. Because you'll be cooking that stuff, and you're like, I'm so glad I got married.
That's what it's designed for. What do you think this ceremony is, Brendan? That's why they do it. Why do you think you have so many people come and so many gifts? Is that every which way you turn in your apartment is like, oh, I got to stay married. We're going to have to return that. You know what I mean? Or, oh, wouldn't it be awful if I had to send these back? I have to say, that's what gets you through the first year, is the guilt involved in those gifts. Because at some point, you're going to have those moments where you're like, what I do? Why'd I do this? It's over. It's going to be the rest of my life. This is ridiculous. Like, oh, with the pan. Look at this pan.
Well, I haven't been through that phase yet.
It's been 3 weeks.
It's been a month. It was a month as of last week. And I got to tell you, doing the Szechuan stir fry and the new wok, I would marry her for 30 years.
Exactly. It's the little things, man, that are going to keep you afloat in that. So let's get into some news. I will tell you this. So over the weekend, I did something I don't think I owe anybody an apology for, but I was at a comedy club. I was at the Improv all weekend. Sorry I didn't tell you folks, but some things you got to do on your own. I'm working out some new stuff. But I got into an argument with some woman who was actually the daughter of Russian immigrant parents, and it was one of these things where I said that the public was turning on Bush, that the public was turning, and that the culture was changing, and that people realized that he misled the country into war, that his administration lied to get us into war. And this woman just looked at me with her eyes just lit up and said, that's not true. And I'm like, no, it is true. It's a fact. She goes, it's not true. And I said, his approval rating is like 35%. She says, well, that's pretty good for a wartime president. And I'm like, what the hell?
What war are you
exactly? What are you talking about? It's the lowest approval rating of any second-term president ever other than Nixon. She's like, I just don't believe it. And I said, well, it's a fact. Why do you think Scooter Libby is in prison? Because this is revolving around, the manufacturing of intelligence and the protecting of that manufactured intelligence. She goes, we'll just have to agree to disagree. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she goes, no, we're agreeing to disagree. And I said, but factually, you're incorrect. Your opinion is based on nothing but delusion and lies. She goes, we'll just agree to disagree. I said, do you even know who Scooter Libby is? She goes, we'll just agree to disagree. And I said, you know what? You're stupid. I called her stupid. Uh-oh. Right there in front of her boyfriend, I called her stupid. The guy who I know, a comedian. And I didn't know it was his girlfriend though at the time. And it just came out of me, Riley. I mean, I got aggravated because she looked at me with that starry-eyed conviction of somebody that it didn't matter whether she had the facts. It didn't matter whether, whether everything, all indications that she was wrong. It was that sort of glowing confidence of somebody that just believes for no reason whatsoever other than they believe.
Well, look, that's the 36%. Okay. Those are the people who are going to do that no matter what happens. Some of them are former military people. We got a lot. Some veterans feel that way, and I understand why they feel that way. The problem is there is mounting and conclusive evidence that this administration lied not just about one little thing, about a raft of things, that they twisted each and every piece of intelligence that they got to put this country where it is today.
Well, that's interesting about the military, Riley, is you make this point, and it's the same point that has to be made about, I guess, all belief. In order for certain people to get through life, and in order for them to do what they need to do for their job or for their sanity, they have to believe in something. But this is one of those conversations where you have, where she's like, you shouldn't get into these conversations about politics. I'm like, no, that's absolutely wrong. I mean, that's another thing I hear a lot when people, like, let's not talk about politics, it's too dicey. Everyone should be talking about politics. Everybody should be talking about these lies. Everybody, even like I barely know what the hell I'm talking about, but I think it's important to start changing the cultural language around this, because he's out there trying to rewrite it again.
Well, yeah, because if we don't change the cultural language, the Bush administration will change the cultural language. We've now got Stephen Hadley, we've got the president himself saying that people who are criticizing the run-up to the war are unfair to the country and unfair to servicemen, without ever asking if the actual run-up to the war was fair to the country or fair to the service people who ended up getting sent over there.
Well, that is exactly it. And this is one of those things when they start addressing the opponents of the war as being dangerous to the troops' morale and to national security or to national morale. The fact is that the modern anti-war movement, or what it became, what it started out as, I guess, during Vietnam, right, Riley, mm-hmm. was really, really where it began to manifest itself, proved one thing, is that once they were pressed, and it took a few decades for everything to come out, and not everything has come out, is that the administration was lying to the people. Young men and women were dying, you know, mostly men during Vietnam, you know, for a war that was, you know, going on too long, unwinnable, and based on lies, not unlike this one, and it was the same type of conflict. So if there is indeed an anti-war movement growing, or an anti, or opponents of the war getting some momentum, which I see that there is, it is absolutely the right thing to do, unless you believe that it's okay for a country to propel itself on lies because it fits the image that you believe America should be fitting.
In the days and weeks ahead, we'll hear more and more stories about how the administration, see, because what the administration is trying to say is, well, we got this intelligence and the intelligence was faulty. The fact of the matter is the administration was told time and time again that some of the intelligence that they were relying on was questionable. Whether you're talking about, for example, the Yellow Cake situation, the meeting in the alleged meeting in Prague between an Al-Qaeda operative and an Iraqi official, January 03 report on Al-Qaeda Iraq connection between that they were trying to buy chemical and biological weapons. All of this stuff was questionable before the war.
Right. The power presentation to the UN.
Yep.
And then you have also using Chalabi as a source for information, and he was a paid, you know, stooge for the Republican administration that might be, as you said, might end up the president of Iraq eventually. These guys had the whole game rigged, and there's no doubt about that they wanted to manufacture intelligence, just because they were adhering to a manifesto that they wanted to go into Iraq before 9/11 even happened. And I'll tell you something, the terrorist attacks in Jordan, you know, after information that's been revealed today and over the weekend, shows that exactly the opposite is happening now in Iraq, in the sense that, you know, there was no connection between terror and Iraq, you know, before 9/11. But now, let me tell you something, it has become not only a recruiting zone, but a training zone for hands-on training to become terrorists, and now those terrorists are moving around the world to other countries. Before we get into that, let me just take a quick caller. You know what? Let's take the call now. Roxy in Seattle, how are you? What's on your mind, Roxy?
Hey, Roxy.
Oh, I just had, that reminded me, a few days into Katrina, I went to my chiropractor, because I've been watching nonstop, you know, this stuff and I got in a huge argument with my chiropractor. He said, well, you know, what's going on? I said, oh, I'm just absolutely fried, because this president has destroyed a city that I've never seen, that I've always wanted to see, and he killed it. And he goes, oh, well, you know, I don't, blah, blah, blah. I don't think you could really pin that on.
Blame the president. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so forth. And so I, you know, talked to him about the Corps of Engineers being defunded, and so forth and so on, and that, you know, there were no, they weren't sending any help, and there was people, you know, who were just dying of starvation,
sure,
and
sure.
dehydration, and so forth. And oh well, you know, you can say, well, you know, now I don't like the way, you know, he's handling Iraq, but
right.
I don't think you could. And I said, that's because you don't know what you're talking about.
Yay! Good for you,
nice
Roxy.
Work,
but
Roxy.
You know, but you know, the next time I say something to him, because that was before it became really obvious, before even the Fox News people started screaming about this stuff, right?
Did you?
So next time I say something to him, he's going to go, oh well, maybe that's true.
Well,
so maybe the stupid girlfriend of your comedian friend will think that too.
I don't know. You know what? You know what's funny, Roxy, is that I saw him the next day and they broke up over this. You have a good day, Roxy.
Take care, Roxy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Were you serious?
Yeah, I'll get into that in a second. It wasn't a long relationship. But,
oh, okay.
You know, but...
this wasn't a squeeze.
Well, it was... They were seeing each other for a couple months, but this guy I've known for years. He's a good friend of mine. And it is an awkward situation when you're standing there watching the woman you're dating get into a fight with somebody else and then being called stupid, which was disrespectful on my part. And I did apologize to her for calling her stupid because she didn't deserve that. But, of course, the argument went on later, and he said that they broke up basically over because he doesn't see things the same way that she does, and you have and that, this just brought out a bunch of stuff. But
Mark Maron relationship killer.
Great. I guess that opening on Loveline might not be the right thing for me. All right, so it's 17 past the hour. We'll be getting into the suicide bombers and the fact, folks, that Iraq has now become not only a training camp for terrorism, but a place of dispatch for suicide bombers at 17 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
This is the Morning Sedition. Look, folks, we were just talking about a story that happened to me over the weekend where I got into an argument with a woman about politics. She said she had an opinion, but she didn't. She had a delusional sense of entitlement because she was Republican and believed in the president no matter what, even though all facts are moving against him culturally. And I called her stupid, and I called her stupid, and I felt bad about it, but I called her stupid right in front of her boyfriend, who I didn't know was her boyfriend at the time, and he is a friend of mine that I don't see that often, clearly. He was at a comedy club. It was, you know, in the hallway kind of discussion. And they went on to break up that night, and my buddy said she was stupid. So, but they got into an argument about politics, which brings us to an interesting thing. I facilitated this dissolution, is that the word, of a relationship because something came out that they might not have known about each other. Have you ever had that happen to you? Have you ever broken up with somebody for political reasons, or have you ever, you know, facilitated
or instigated
a breakup? Not intentionally, necessarily. Give us a call at 866-303-2270. Tell us a story. Tell us a story about that. Because I think it's very interesting that sometimes you just really don't know who the person you're with. Now, granted, these two weren't together that long, but it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting event to happen where all of a sudden you're like, I thought I knew you. I thought we were on the same page here, and we aren't. And thanks to that guy who,
told you out.
Yeah, exactly. 866-303-2270 for any of those kind of stories. But let's get into this for a minute because I found this interesting. Yesterday, an Iraqi woman confessed to being part of the group of suicide bombers that detonated themselves at three different Western chain hotels in Jordan last week. The twist is that she was part of a husband and wife suicide bombing team. She made her confession on Jordanian TV wearing a disarmed explosive belt. She said that her husband put on his explosive belt loaded with RDX and then hers. They both wore vests that were packed with ball bearings for maximum casualty. Her husband showed her how to detonate the bomb, and they left to go to the Radisson, dressed for a party, and showed up at a wedding reception. So her husband detonated his bomb, and she tried to detonate hers. It didn't work, and she ran out of the party with the surviving guests. Now, her husband has been confirmed as one of the three Iraqi men that exploded themselves at the hotels, killing 57 people. The interesting thing here to me, Riley, is that they were all Iraqis. And this is something we've been saying on this show for a long time. Before 9/11, no connection between Iraq and terrorism, although it was one of the false bits of information that this administration tried to sell the people of this country to go to war. But now, not only is there a connection between Iraq and terrorism, but Al-Qaeda or Iraq, al-Zarqawi's organization, is now not only, you know, operating out of Iraq, but dispatching teams of suicide bombers and terrorists to neighboring countries.
This is truly scary, Mark, in that, A, it shows how porous the border is between Iraq and Jordan, because you're looking at a situation here where these folks apparently moved across the border on November 5th. Which was just a few days before the actual bombing took place. They rented an apartment in a middle-class suburb and were able to obviously walk right past security at the, I believe, was that at the Ramada?
The Radisson.
The Radisson, I'm sorry.
What's interesting, though, is like you were saying, they just got into a car and crossed the border. Now, granted, they were coming in, you know, right over the border. I mean, the town they come from, Anbar, it was a Sunni guerrilla stronghold. It borders Jordan. But nonetheless, you would think that on some level, these border towns, certainly the larger ones, you know, they would have some way of filtering through this stuff. But the thing that really interests me is that, as you said yesterday in our conversation on the phone, Riley, is that it's amazing how porous these borders are. But it's also very interesting and very frightening to see that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi is functioning in Iraq. And he is not only functioning, but he is dispatching groups of terrorists outside of the country. So now, not only is Iraq affiliated with terrorism now that the Americans are there, but it has become a headquarters for a branch of the most frightening terrorist organization, or what we've grown to believe is the most frightening terrorist organization on the planet.
Well, yeah, and this woman's brother, apparently, who was killed in Fallujah some time ago, was Zarqawi's right-hand guy.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see the level. See, because this woman made apparently a very straightforward on-camera confession as to what she did. Her husband was gone, obviously. His bomb went off. And she seemed to have no problem with her bomb going off and her having been killed in all this.
I wonder
what she was doing.
I wonder if he set it up so she wouldn't die. I mean, that, you know, I'll tell you, that's a hell of a marriage. That's a hell of a dark commitment, isn't it? To expect that out of a marriage.
It is, and it's scary, I think, to some extent, that there are probably more people like this, and she was only found out because of a slip-up on the part of the people that sent the email claiming responsibility.
Right, from Al-Qaeda. There was a married couple involved. All right, so look, we're taking, has politics ever screwed up your relationship, or have you ever screwed up someone else's with politics? 866-303-2270. Calls are coming in 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We got calls lining up here. I just told a story. Something happened over the weekend about me causing some trouble in someone's relationship because I provoked...
causing trouble?
I provoked a woman into a conversation about politics. I ended up calling her stupid, though I ended up apologizing for calling her stupid, though she was stupid. My friend who was there, I didn't realize it was his girlfriend. They broke up because of the political interaction that I had with her, and I guess they had later. We're taking calls 866-303-2270 about people who have had similar situations, either breaking up or breaking someone up over politics. We're going to get to those calls in a second. I will get to them right in a second here. I'm going to do the iNews. I also want to tell people that no matter what happens here on Air America, if you'd like information about my future in the world of radio and the world of television, markmaron.com. You can go there and get on my mailing list. I'm planning on engaging that. So, you know, I've got a lot of people there already, but I will keep you abreast of what's going on with me if you go to markmaron.com and sign up on my mailing list. That aside, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From the Seattle Times, Bush fires back at critics of war. Bush fires back at critics of war. Translation. Help, I'm drowning, help. From ABC News, events force U.S. France to face flaws. Events force U.S. France to face flaws. Translation, merd happens. From the Associated Press, Schwarzenegger travels to China on trade mission. Schwarzenegger travels to China on trade mission. Translation, Schwarzenegger takes on video pirates personally.
Yes.
All right, let's do this. Let's take some calls. Ann in North Carolina. Good morning, Ann. So you got something, what happened with your relationship over politics?
Hey, Ann.
Good morning, guys. I went out with somebody for about 2 months, and unbeknownst to me, he was a little more conservative than I thought.
Uh-huh.
We got into a discussion about education in the United States versus education in the rest of the world, and all of a sudden he started flag-waving and saying America was best at everything. And I just had it after a while, and I gave him facts, I gave him figures, he wouldn't listen. And so I finally got up, pulled out my wallet, took out my money for my dinner, paid for my dinner, told him I couldn't have dinner with somebody that stupid, much less go out with him, and left.
Did you use the word stupid?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's so weird when you use that word with anger and you mean it.
You know, I have to preface that I actually was born and raised in New York, so I'm kind of a New York woman.
Uh-huh.
Where in North Carolina are you, Ann?
I'm at right outside Asheville.
Oh, okay. I bet you I know the restaurant you went to also. But that's so you just broke up with him, huh?
Wait, let's play the game. What restaurant did you go to?
We were in New York when this happened.
Oh, you were here. Okay.
We were in New York. I think we were on Columbus Avenue, if I remember.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's very exciting. So you feel better for it, right?
I feel much better for it. I've learned to scream now.
Oh, good. Scream?
If I don't meet them at a move-on, event or something like that.
Progressive mixers of that sort.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing with us.
Thanks a lot, Ann.
You take care, Ann. That's hilarious. Stupid. It just comes right out.
Call them stupid.
Well, you can't. You know, once their eyes glaze over and they have this conviction and commitment about stuff that is clearly wrong, what else can it be? It's denial. It's stupidity. It's a belief system that's faulty, but it exists. There's a lot of them out there.
Well, yeah, and it happened here, so he probably never got another date while he was in New York.
Well, I'm sure he'll never come back to New York or date someone from New York. You know, those women are too feisty.
Feisty, yeah, too pushy.
Hey, Maxine in Maine, what do you got for us? You got a story?
Hey, Maxine.
Hi, how are you guys?
All right.
Yeah, in the 60s,
uh-huh.
I was young and politically naive, and I got married, and then the Vietnam War came along, and we started watching the news, and I was very much against the war, and my state police trooper husband was very much for it.
Uh-huh.
And we just argued and argued, and finally I left one day.
Wow.
After 5 years of marriage.
And I'm sure that did he have the police force looking for you?
Oh yeah, he threatened to kill me and almost carried it out, but
whoa,
I survived.
Wow. So
the courage of your convictions.
So you were against the war, but you sort of had to go to war yourself.
Right. And the funny thing is that we got reacquainted because I always liked his mother, so I always sent Christmas cards. And just recently, we were corresponding by email, and he was spouting all this right-wing neocon stuff.
Yeah,
and
talking points.
Talking points. And this went on for about a month, and I finally did the same thing again.
I said,
get out of my life. I don't want to ever talk to you again.
Oh, so you actually had an email exchange with this guy after how many years had you?
Oh, man, what, 40 years?
Oh, my God. Well, I hope he doesn't show up with a gun again.
Yeah, right. I was hoping that, too, because I went home for my high school reunion, and he used to crash my reunions, and I was thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get killed.
Oh, no, Maxine. Well, thanks for sharing that story. I appreciate it.
All righty.
You take care.
God, I hope I don't run into her husband on the road sometime.
Well, it's an interesting thing about these kind of people that I think whether they're men or women, that there's a control issue at the core of it, because if you're committing to stuff that is clearly bunk, that you have to have some sort of control issues. And I think that goes on both sides, so obviously I've met a lot of controlling progressive people. Ernie in Philadelphia, what do you got?
Hey, Ernie.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, all right, man. What's up?
Love the show.
Thanks.
I got kind of a funny story for you.
Yeah.
I'm a retired Philadelphia teacher, and when I was young and naive, I married a woman who was attracted to me because I was kind of a firebrand and a rebel.
Yeah.
So when I got into the high school where I taught, I was the building rep, and we had a strike.
Yeah.
And she was a teacher at another school, another high school in the city. Well, I was the building rep leading the strikers around my school, and she scabbed in her building.
What?
Yeah, she scabbed.
She scabbed?
Talk about not knowing your partner.
Oh, my God.
And she used all kinds of weird excuses about we needed the income, and she admired the principal and all kinds of nonsense.
Oh, and that was it?
Yeah, well, what was kind of ironic, we broke up as a result of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually got a divorce.
Yeah.
But the principal that she loved so much and would follow through fire and rain, they had an argument, and the woman wrote her up on a disciplinary report and transferred her.
Oh!
Poetic justice.
Well, that,
exactly.
That's
exactly.
Unbelievable. Thanks a lot for sharing your story there, Ernie.
Okay.
You take
care.
Thanks, Ernie.
You know, it's weird when you have those moments when you're with somebody that you think you know, that you think you love, and you know, the weird thing is not only does love fade, but it doesn't take much for you to hate the person you're with, especially if it's an ideological difference, that all of a sudden this person that you love so much, that you're so attracted to, says something that just blows your mind, and you can never look at them the same.
I've never really dealt with a conservative woman that I can think of, because I didn't discuss politics with all of the people I hung out with, but I just never remember getting into that serious. But, you know, scabby, how could you, did she go out to work in the morning, hey, I'm going to get some cigarettes or something, and goes to work at another school?
Well, you know, it's incredible how people rationalize. I mean, and this is something that happens on both the progressive and the right, is that if people want to do something, they will figure out, even if they know it's wrong, more so if they know it's wrong, they will figure out a million different ways to validate
a rationale or three.
Of course, even if it's completely false, just so they can feel better. It's very dangerous. This is somebody, BA in Illinois. What's going on? This is a different kind of call, but what happened?
Hey, BA.
Okay, hi there. Well, first of all, what I think is stupid is Air America canceling you guys.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
Well, thanks.
But I was I'm a NASCAR fan. I know I'm a liberal Democrat NASCAR fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the Bristol race last August, and I have bumper stickers on my truck expressing my viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody defaced my bumper stickers and then tried to block the exhaust system, and they did. They blocked the exhaust system in my pickup, so whenever I was sitting in the pickup after the race, I was getting really, really tired.
Oh, my God.
The carbon monoxide was filling the cab, and I didn't realize that somebody was, like, pounding on my window trying to get me to open up the window and then turn the engine off so they can unblock the exhaust.
Oh, my God.
So they tried to kill me because of my political beliefs.
Yeah, you almost died then.
Wow.
I almost died. I was within a couple minutes of dying of carbon monoxide asphyxiation.
Because, you know, people, when that happens,
thanks a lot for your call, BA. Yeah, well, exactly, and thank God someone told her. But you know that. But see, that could have been kids. It could have been, you know, just like, the hell with her, man, and just do this prank, you know, thinking that they're just going to cause somebody some trouble, but they could have killed somebody.
Yeah, and then they'd have been real sorry afterwards.
Yeah, maybe. Who the hell knows? Well, look, let's take this one last call here. Who is this? Hey, Bill, what's going on in California?
What's up, Bill?
I've been laughing my butt off here.
Good. Well, I'm glad.
I met a woman from Florida on an online dating service, and it was very exciting. We got lots of talk on the phone, and then she wanted to come out and see me. So when I discovered her politics, and she loved Bush, the run-up to the election, and I said, I can't believe that anybody would really like this man.
And this is when she flew out, though?
Well, she didn't fly out.
She never made it to California.
I ended up telling her she was stupid.
That's stupid. Hey, stupid.
Is this a stupid morning here or what?
Thanks for your call, Bill.
It is. You're welcome.
All right. Lucky she didn't fly out. I had a friend that met somebody. They had a relationship with somebody online, and they built up to the point where it's like, I'm going to fly you out. And he just told
us. Don't remind me of flying women out.
No, but he just told me about this thing where the woman shows up, and just like right when he sees her at the gate, he's like, oh, no. You know? Which is so sad because what do you know? You don't know. You're doing it.
Yeah, you do know.
Well, no, but you do know when you see them that they may not be right for you. But in the email, it's like, ooh, how you doing?
Good,
you know,
yeah.
And this goes on for weeks. It's like, oh, and then, it's tragic.
Well, you know what? The other party, whether it be a man or a woman, because women do the same thing, They know. From the minute you meet them at the gate, if you're not the one they think you are, they know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whoa.
You got to play along.
He looks deflated.
Right. Of course. But then there's got to be a series of sad meals and
yeah.
the awkward sort of like, well, I came. We might as well do it.
Yeah. And then, can I get your cab back to the airport?
Can I get you a cab back to Ohio or wherever the hell you're from? I don't know. It's got to happen on both sides, of course. Look, according to the Wall Street Journal, 6 in 10 people, including 43% of Republicans, say that there should be a public investigation into the exposure of Valerie Plame's identity. 69% of Americans hold Dick Cheney responsible for the leak. 54% hold Bush responsible. Finally, well over half the people of the United States believe that the president and vice president lied about something, which is good. We're going to talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes, because there's a lot of issues at hand now in terms of, you know, we've got the black sites, the CIA secret torture prisons. We've got Scooter Libby, who could go on trial, which would be very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get into that stuff a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit about maybe a little bit more about the president's speech. And also here in New York, the Fulton Fish Market closed, which is going to be a tremendous shift
yeah.
for something that is really part of the history of this city. So hang out for that kind of stuff. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Fifty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Morning.
Don't believe them. Don't believe these bastards. Don't believe the president. Don't believe Stephen Hadley saying they were wrong about the WMDs, the weapons of mass destruction. Admitting they were wrong is one thing, but framing it as saying that the intelligence leading up to the war was being the best they could get from a collective effort, saying it was relied upon by us, by world leaders, by the Congress, by the president, by prior administrations, it's a load. It's just a load. And then to drag the Democrats into it, saying, hey, these guys voted for the war because of the intelligence. You gave them the intelligence. The White House Iraq group bullied the intelligence. The vice president bullied the intelligence. Half of it was lies, and there's proof of that. Don't believe this frame. It's just ridiculous.
Well, see, they're doing the same thing to Democrats in Congress that they did to the CIA. The CIA warned them that some of this information about weapons of mass destruction was bogus. They warned them before the war. But what did the Bush administration do? The first time somebody questioned them, it's the CIA's fault. And that's the same thing they're doing with the Democrats right now. The Democrats went along with the program up to a certain point. Some Democrats said, well, hey, you know what? Maybe we should... No. We're all going to get down with the program.
That's right.
And as soon as the program turns... Yep. It's their fault.
That's right. And he's trying to drag everyone down with him, but don't. This is a separating point, you know, and I think, you know, Howard Dean knows it's a separating point. He said, Dan, don't listen to that. That's just ridiculous. And the fact, here's the interesting thing around this before we get into Cheney and the Fulton Fish Market. The press is not, you know, I had some faith recently that the press was mobilizing, that they were starting to do their job, but they're not responding to this properly. They should be illustrating the lies that are coming out now. They should be doing it now in response to the president's statement, in response to Stephen Hadley's statement, in response to Ken Mellman's statement, trying to drag the Democrats into that, trying to act contrite and act like they were as baffled as everybody else about the WMDs. But the bottom line is there's every indication that they knew all of this going in. And I'm waiting for somebody in the press to take responsibility and just list the things that we already know. It wouldn't even take you any risk on behalf of journalistic integrity to just list what's already out there. You wouldn't even have to investigate much.
Well, you know, it's interesting how the press goes back and forth on this, because the press is, in my judgment, highly susceptible to right-wing demagoguery aimed at the press. So, in other words, when the Washington Post puts out a piece about black sites, then the next thing that happens is everybody turns on them, not on the issue of whether or not the CIA is torturing people forever and ever, amen, whether or not the paper should leak anything. And then they start hammering at the press. These people are leaking national security secrets, and then the press gets timid again.
Well, that's it, and that has a lot to do with the talking point outlets of the Republican Party. The one thing that these guys have done over the last 30 years is put billions of dollars into disseminating information through a bunch of stooges. You got Limbaugh, you got Drudge, you got a lot of people who are out there just ready to disseminate straight-out Republican talking points, and that infiltrates the culture, it infiltrates the news organizations. There isn't that many outlets for integrity or truth in terms of news, and I think that's changing. I think it's changing with Air America. I think it's changing with what we're trying to do here, but there's still quite a battle to fight. These guys put this in place primarily for this very reason. 30 years ago, a bunch of capitalists got together, you know, strong free market thinkers and right-wing ideologues, and said, look, they can never question the integrity of capitalism again, and they can never question the integrity of our decisions to go into wars again. So that was a response to the threat of socialism that they saw on behalf of the protesters in the 60s, and the threat to free market capitalism that happened out of that revolt against the war in Vietnam. And that's what you're seeing now when they use words like opponents of the war or protesters. They're trying to characterize these people as a threat to the way we live, as opposed to being people executing their civic duty to question the integrity of a presidential administration and what is supposed to be a democracy.
Well, it's amazing, Mark, to hear what you just said, which is to some of these people, the absence of war might as well be socialism. In other words, if you don't have war going on, if you don't have this situation where there is a clearly defined enemy, then the nation's capital markets really can't function the way they want them to.
Right.
Very interesting to think about.
That is very interesting, because this war is designed, as you see in the president's speech, how he talked about it, as something that really has no end.
Exactly.
It has no specific nation state. It just is an ideology that he sees as malignant and viral, which clearly it is, and violent and homicidal. But the way he characterizes it is essentially that not just in Iraq, but around the world, this thing will go on forever. And the bottom line is that there is disingenuous on behalf of this administration to not bring up the fact that this ideology is manufactured in Saudi Arabia, that we have a relationship with Saudi Arabia that can't be meddled with, according to them, and that it comes out of there. It is breeded there. It is now breeding in Iraq, as far as a place where they dispatch terrorists, but Saudi Arabia and Egypt are these are the places that designed the Muslim Brotherhood that evolved into Al-Qaeda. That is a truth that nobody talks about. He characterizes these Arab nations as being victims of terrorism. It is still breeding terrorists. Saudi Arabia is a terrorist manufacturing plant that we happen to get most of our oil from.
Yeah, and, you know, for looking at it from that perspective, Iraq is found money to these people, because they didn't expect Iraq to be the kind of terrorist breeding ground that Bush has now made it. And by the way, while everyone's focusing on Iraq, don't think for a moment that many of these same folks are trying to start madrasas that preach this kind of extreme Islam in sub-Saharan Africa. And that's where you're going to start hearing and seeing more and more violence being fomented. We've heard it on a small basis in the Sudan and other places. Watch it expand.
Yeah, or else maybe they did plan it all so it would go on forever. All right, and what about that, independent speculative investigators? Huh? What about that? A guy on the phone here has got a point about that the war resolution wasn't a yes or no vote. Maybe we'll take that call in a second. We got to get to Cheney. And, of course, we got to get to the fish. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? I just want to say that there's an announcement imminent about the future of mornings here at Air America. I don't know what that announcement is yet or what part I'm going to be playing in the future of mornings on Air America, but I'll tell you, either way, you can go to my website, markmaron.com, and sign up for my mailing list to find out what I'll be doing in the future. I swear to God I'm going to use that mailing list now. I haven't because I've been here hanging out. But here's the kind of letter, and the support for myself and for Mornings Edition has been great, and I appreciate it. But this is the kind of letter, this one made me cry, folks. I am a high school history teacher in a small rural community in Montana. Luckily enough, I live close to the great city of Missoula, a liberal bastion surrounded by a sea of misguided, uninformed conservatives. My life changed this past summer when 105.9 KNS, a Missoula station, became the first Air America affiliate in the state. I found myself turning off the television, setting aside my wasteful habits, and tuning in to voices of reason and hope. Being liberal in a state like Montana can cause apathy and, worse yet, complacency in terms of political action and thought. Your show woke me up. Your show gives me reason to believe that the young adults who huddle in my classroom can find alternative and progressive voices in the mainstream media. I try and do my part to promote tolerance and real education in my classroom. Many of my students have never traveled outside of the state, let alone the country. When students would come into my class in the mornings, they would catch snippets of your show that I downloaded off of iTunes. It wasn't intentional, but through various skits, Cardinal Milfington is a student favorite, they would become intrigued, and I even had a group start meeting outside of school in the morning to listen to your show. They listen because of the comedy, and they get educated as a byproduct. Many of them ask questions in class and are constantly seeking additional resources of information so that they can, quote, unquote, quote, get, unquote, the joke, the comedy that used to go over their heads. I know you've heard thousands of voices calling for you to stay. I just wanted to include the voices of some punk Montana kids and a rebel teacher. Thank you so much. That thing, that's just beautiful.
Wow, that is fantastic.
Because that illustrates the power of what we're doing here. It illustrates the power of comedy. And that's always been my belief about comedy and why I got into comedy. So now let's get into the politics of what's going on right now. Let's talk about Cheney. I promised a little Cheney talk, and we didn't really get into it. But first, let's set this guy straight, or let him set us straight. Jeff in New Jersey, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah. Listen, them blaming all the critics now who are allegedly backpedaling. Well, they voted for the war. It's a bunch of crap because the Iraqi resolution was not just a yes or no, up or down vote. Do you want to invade Iraq? Yes or no. It was a plan where military action was the bone dry last resort, and the threat of that military action was the leverage used to get the inspectors in there and get the process going. And Bush became a cowboy and pulled the plug on the inspectors before it was time. They did not follow through with the plan, and too many people believe that the Iraqi resolution was just, well, do you want to invade or not? It was not that simple. And
no, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't. In fact, it had, I don't know how many paragraphs to it, but at least 100 whereases, because it goes back and talks about the UN resolutions going back to 1990. So you're right about that. It was not just a yes or no vote. They did vote for it, the House 296 to 133, and the Senate 77 to 23.
Thanks for your call, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate it. So, here, Kerry, let's get into a couple of this. The Fulton Fish Market in Lower Manhattan closed down after 180 years. The market was the heart of the city's seafood industry and an amazing place to visit. It opened in 1822 and moves about $1 billion worth of fish a year, my friends. It has moved to a new $85 million facility up in the Bronx. It's basically one giant refrigerator because the FDA has new rules that all fish must be refrigerated indoors. The new facility is going to be climate controlled at 41 degrees. Now, this is the interesting thing about this, and the reason this is important on a national level, is that this is one of these great places, Riley. Obviously, the reason they're changing locations is not a bad reason. But the bottom line is you've got generations of people down there in the Fulton Fish Market in Lower Manhattan that have been working there. Their grandfathers worked there. Their fathers worked there. They opened businesses there in the 1800s. I mean, multi-generations of people that came up there. People have been buying their fish there. And it's got that feel of old New York, of one of those places that has a tremendous amount of authenticity and integrity. And it's never going to not smell like fish, I can tell you that.
Well, I'll tell you, they may say that part of the reason why, the big reason why they're doing this is because of new FDA regulations. The other thing they have tried to do is get rid of what are called the fishmongers, the people that unload the fish from the trucks and spread it out for people to pick from. Because that was supposedly where organized crime, which has been part of the fish market for a long time, had its biggest foothold. And what they did was take that responsibility away from the fishmongers that have been doing it down there for all these years and moved it to a private contractor, which was a bone of very big contention around the fish market reopening in the Bronx.
Well, I imagine what they're going to do with it now is make it somewhat similar to the South Street Seaport area. They're probably going to, you know, respect some of the integrity of the structures and
the old market, yeah,
and they're going to make it sort of what do you call it, urban renewal kind of mallish kind of feel. I don't know. I haven't heard any plans.
Do we need another mall?
No, sir, we don't. Here's a couple of quick news bites. Samuel Alito, the new nominee for Supreme Court Justice, when he was applying to become deputy assistant to Attorney General Edwin Meese, said, quote, "The Constitution does not protect the right to an abortion. I personally believe very strongly," end quote. The document will be released today by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. Also in the papers, he is quoted as saying, "I am and always have been a conservative. I am a lifelong registered Republican." That's not surprising, my friends. This is a bit off-putting, though. Quote, "I am particularly proud of my contribution in recent cases in which the government has argued in the Supreme Court that racial and ethnic quotas should not be allowed and that the Constitution does not protect abortions," end quote. Now, to me, this is saying the jury is in. There's no doubt in my mind that this guy will vote to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Well, you know, either that or he was the biggest kiss-up known to mankind trying to get that gig with Ed Meese in the Reagan administration. What's interesting, too, Mark, is that there are some organizations now that oppose Alito that are not just focusing on abortion. They're starting to look at some of these other things. They're starting to look at some of his decisions and opinions with regard to race, mm-hmm. with regard to big business,
yeah.
with regard to some of the things that we've been talking about over time and saying, look, we don't just have to hit him on abortion. We can hit him on a whole host of issues.
Well, I hope they do hit him. I really do. Here's some big, the big dirty news about the black sites of the CIA's covert torture jail chain is coming out. John Kerry, in a surprising moment of courage and fortitude, proposed that the U.S. Senate has asked John Negroponte to give a report and testify to two congressional intelligence panels on allegations that the CIA ran secret jails for terrorist suspects in about a half a dozen countries. The black sites were set up after 9/11 and held, you know, anywhere. I mean, they know about 30 detainees, but it could be more. Now, just let's not forget that John Negroponte, the Black Bridge, is how his name translates, you know, was the ambassador to Honduras from 1981 to 1985. And for the past 20 or some odd years, he has been under a dark cloud for the charge that he dramatically underplayed human rights abuses by death squads to ensure that the U.S. would continue to serve as a base for the U.S.-backed Contras. Now, this is a guy who's got no conscience about human rights, that's for sure, and he's now the intelligence czar. What's his official title? The head of intelligence? The king
of
intelligence?
It may well be intelligence czar.
Hey, really, the intelligence czar. The Senate last week also voted to bar terrorism suspects at Gitmo from taking legal action in the U.S. court system, but I guess that's a provision that has a bit of time. It has a ways to go before it actually becomes a law.
It's got a ways to go, but the question people ought to ask themselves mm-hmm. is, if our law and our system is so fair, why shouldn't combatants go through it? Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, they're accused of some heinous stuff, but we got a court system here that is supposed to work. So why not put them through it? Oh, are they afraid the jury's going to find them not guilty if they don't have enough evidence or something? If they've got the goods on these people, put them through the U.S. court system, try them, convict them, put them away.
That's the way it has to work, because as we're seeing with England and as we're seeing with just the general sense of civil libertarians, is that the way that terrorism is going to be combated on a local level is through law enforcement and through the legal system of the United States. Not through some sort of covert sort of military tribunals or holding people detained for forever without charge here in America. You know, that's transcending or transgressing international law. And I believe that our legal system can do this.
Oh, yeah. And again, people are going to, over the next few days and weeks, focus on the leak. Focus on the Washington Post as if it's the Post's fault that these places exist. It's not.
John Negroponte is the Director of National Intelligence. And here, before we take a few minutes, let me just throw this out to my buddy out there, Brett, the teacher in Missoula, and your students. I had a little trouble doing the promos for the Missoula station.
Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News and Progressive Talk Station. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News.
Why is that so funny? Missoula. That's stupid.
How many times do I got to say this?
Tune in to morning. Come on, man. I got to go someplace. Tune in to. I don't even know why the 66 happened. it's not that funny. Tune in to Morning Sedition. Come on. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula. Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to... Come on. Tune in. Tune in to Morning Damn it. I don't understand what's going on. This is stupid. How many of these I got? What are these? Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Tune in to Morning Sedition weekdays from 6 to 9 on Missoula's News and Progressive Talk Station, 105.9 KNS.
Thank God.
There you go.
What happened? I missed the last part of that. Thank God. That's what I said. Thank God. Hey, you know, you get those laughing jags. You don't know how to stop them. But that was for you, Brett, and your students. Thank you for the letter. In just a couple minutes, I guess we'll talk about Scooter Libby. We didn't get to that yet. Still a little trouble in France going on. And also, we should get into a conversation about Drudge and what the Drudge Report means and how he uses, race baiting and gossip and slander to promote something that is being accepted in the culture as a journalist. Journalistic website, which it isn't. 17 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You gotta keep them separated.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State, here to remind you that God and politics don't mix. That's why I get my God from the Good Book and my politics from Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, of course.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Yay.
13 happy years with my lovely wife.
And she is a very nice woman and a lovely person.
Yes.
And I congratulate you. That's a great thing. 13 years, it's a great thing. And as you know, if you can get that far, and that's not that far to some people, but if you can get that far and still be happy, it's tremendous.
I'm happy.
Good. There you go. You want to say it again a couple more times?
Yeah, honey, I'm happy.
Did you buy her a present?
Yes.
All right. You'll tell us
but
tomorrow.
But she don't have it yet.
Yeah, so when's she getting it?
When my daughter gets home.
Oh,
it has to be a group giving thing.
Okay, so we'll get the report tomorrow.
Yes.
Excellent. I think I know what it is. We know things are tough in the job market right now, so we've decided to help out, folks. We scanned through the Sunday Help Wanted listings and found this for our Morning Sedition Monday job listing. You heard Pat Robertson told the people of Dover, PA, not to call on God if a disaster hits their city because they rejected God. Now it looks like they're trying to cover their asses. Emergency Services Director. The city of Dover, Pennsylvania, seeks someone with extensive emergency management skills. We have reason to expect a grievous smiting. The ideal candidate will know how to deal with heavy rain, specifically rains of fire and brimstone. It would also be helpful if you knew what the heck brimstone is. You will be expected to develop contingency plans to deal with massive civilian casualties from causes such as burning, drowning, or being turned into pillars of salt. Additionally, applicants must be able to deal with emergencies involving, but not limited to, the following. Swarms of locusts, gnats, and or flies. A tide of blood upon the rivers and all the ponds of waters, that they may be turned into blood and blood be in all the land. A plague of frogs, especially a grievous plague of frogs. A pestilence upon horses, asses, camels, and all the beasts of the field. Boils, darkness upon the whole land. And finally, death of the firstborn. If interested, please send a resume and, pray for us. We can't. God has turned his back on us. There you go. A little biblical. Jim Earlish. So, should we do the talk about Drudge? I feel like I've been putting off this Cheney thing, and the Cheney thing is really just essentially that 69% of Americans hold Dick Cheney responsible for the leak that outed Valerie Plame's identity, and this is specifically because of the Scooter Libby indictment. Now, 54% hold Bush responsible. Now, theoretically, this should be about, in the Maron's math, about 70% of the people believe these two are lying and that they outed an undercover undercover CIA agent to protect themselves politically and putting national security at risk. Now, what's going to happen with Scooter Libby? What's going to happen with that indictment? I mean, the GOP party line is that he was busy. Too busy, Riley. Couldn't be expected to remember where or who he told first about Valerie Plame's identity and that, you know. And then the bottom line is Fitzgerald didn't indict him on the crime, so there was no crime. This is BS. All right, Karl Rove is still under investigation. Scooter Libby is a smart guy. He didn't just forget. He said twice, once to investigators and once to the grand jury, that it was Tim Russert who first told him about Plame, and that is proven untrue. The bottom line is, as time goes on and as more things are revealed, even in his own notebooks, is that Dick Cheney told him about Valerie Plame.
Yeah, but and what's interesting about this, Mark, is that they seem to have turned it into a Columbo episode or something. They're saying now, Scooter Libby supporters are saying, well, Scooter Libby is too smart to have lied to a prosecutor or a grand jury about information that they knew that the grand jury may have, or that he knew they may have already had.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he wouldn't be that dumb. If he was taking one on the chin for his boss, he might have been real dumb. And mm-hmm. that may be what's at issue here, and the question of whether or not he actually goes to trial may hinge on exactly who Patrick Fitzgerald's witness list is if he does.
Now, but let me ask you something, Robbie, because in order for this not to go to trial, Libby would have to make some sort of deal, right?
He'd have to cop a plea, yeah.
Well, okay, so he'd have to plead guilty or else maybe tell him that he'd rat out somebody else.
Well, he'd have to plead guilty in exchange for some leniency. He would probably end up having to rat out somebody else. He would have to probably put some meat on the bones in terms of Rove's role and Cheney's role.
So now, do you think that Fitzgerald is gunning for a trial to get all these guys out in the open to look like the rats that they are and the criminals that they are in a courtroom?
I think Fitzgerald is prepared for anything.
Okay.
Okay. Whether it's a trial, whether it's a plea, even if he decides to take a bench trial instead of a jury trial, I guarantee you Fitzgerald is ready.
Okay. So now, in a couple minutes, let's talk about the Drudge Report. Let's talk about who Matt Drudge is. Let's talk about what he really does on that website, because a lot of liberals read it. A lot of the left reads it, but it's designed for the right, and it's designed for a specific reason. It's not journalistic integrity. It is to bait people. It is to create hatred and to disseminate right-wing talking points. So we're going to talk about that, especially in how he handled the 50 Cent movie in a classic bit of Drudge race baiting. So let's do that in a second. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning. I hope it's going okay. It's Monday. We're doing what we can here. In a few minutes, we're going to have James Walcott from Vanity Fair out here to talk about what he talks about best, which is just about everything. We're going to have Morning Remembrance in just a few minutes, so get your hankies out. But we were getting into a conversation before the break there about the Drudge Report and who this guy Matt Drudge is. Now, make no mistake of it. Matt Drudge is not a journalist. He's not a good person. He's an evil bastard. He's a hate-mongering gossip columnist who really is not ashamed of being a hate-mongering gossip columnist, but he does it for the right. And the bottom line is, as much as everybody sources Drudge, I mean, I know liberals, I know right-wing, not right-wing people, but certainly left-wing people that go check out the Drudge Report to see what's on it. And the bottom line is he is able to dictate some news. He is able, because of the exposure of that site to 50 million some odd people, is able to make news with what he puts up there, and sometimes that news is heinous in terms of where it comes from. I guess it was like in late October, you had this issue, this is a couple of weeks ago, about Samuel Alito being not unlike Scalia and the nickname Scalito. So Drudge put something up there that sort of characterizes this as some sort of slang or a slander of Italian Americans to create this guy into a sympathetic figure, which was the Republican agenda around Alito a couple of weeks ago, was to make him, hey, he's just a nice guy. You know, don't beat up on him. He's a professorial type.
Well, see, what Drudge does is go beyond where most right-wing Republicans will go. He will say that the Democrats have an organized campaign to slander Alito and Scalia because they're Italian. He's got no shred of evidence other than a source told me in 90% of the stuff he writes. And he is the attack poodle that goes further than anybody else will in trying to do this sort of thing because he's Matt Drudge, and that's what people expect him to do.
Right, and he's a self-proclaimed gossip columnist. He doesn't have to abide by any standards whatsoever. He can put complete slander up on his site and get away with it because of how he characterizes himself. But there was a series of articles yesterday around the opening of 50 Cent's new movie, and the bottom line is that the way it was framed because of the links that Drudge put up there was race baiting, and there's no other way to characterize it. You know, he starts talking about how the movie didn't open at number one, that Chicken Little and Zathura, you know, beat it. You know, but it was on 5,000 fewer screens. And then there's a link to a Fox story about the failure or the supposed failure. It didn't fail. It was number three. It didn't. Yeah, it made what it was supposed to make. But I'll tell you, there's a link to on Drudge's side to a Fox story, a Fox News story.
Roger Friedman, yeah.
Unbelievable, the tone of this guy, Riley.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's almost like saying, ha, 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 this guy's just a criminal. There's no reason that he should make any money at all, and I'm glad he's not.
Well, what they're saying is he's a flash-in-the-pan criminal. What they ignore is the central question of how much the thing cost to make in the first place and whether or not what they got was an accurate assessment or accurate based on their projections prior to the weekend. In other words, did they make what they thought they were going to make?
Yeah, but there's a racial undercurrent to these stories.
Oh, there's a deep racial undercurrent. I mean, they bling-bling and all the rest is, hey, this was a story about a hip-hop artist, yeah, but that doesn't mean that it gives people license to stereotype, the artist himself or the person that's in the film or the people that go to see it, which in many cases is really the backdoor group that they're trying to slander here.
He did it to Chris Rock too around the Oscars not long ago. He pulled something out of Chris Rock's act, a fairly tasteless but nonetheless poignant joke about abortion, and characterized Rock as being not he should not be used to host the Oscars.
In the Oscars. He also did something did a number on Margaret Cho at one point.
So this guy just does not like ethnic entertainers. He does not like anybody that represents different ethnicities having an attitude about anything. They should just be complacent and compliant to whatever the dominant white culture decides for them.
Yeah, and you know, Drudge has been called more than once on stories that he's put up on that Drudge Report where he has had to retract them, and in a couple of cases, including one involving Sidney Blumenthal, he got sued.
Yeah, well, I guess lawsuits are just more publicity for that guy. I've never seen anyone, you know, register more bile in our producer, Brendan McDonald, than Drudge. It's funny when Brendan gets angry because he gets really angry.
Maybe the Parent Television Council as well.
Yes,
the two groups.
But it's funny because it's always around how media is used and how media is represented that gets you like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, because it's easy for them to do, and there's not enough counteraction on the other side to hold the mirror up to it and let people see, look, you're being duped by this. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the great reasons that a guy like Jim Walcott exists.
Yes, and also what's interesting, even when they do let it slide, it seems that the more lurid the TV show is, that these shows that these people always criticize do fine in the ratings, if not great, which means plenty of people that they're trying to disseminate this information to are watching it, whether they're secretly doing it or not admitting that they're watching it, they're watching it. So I don't know what point it serves but to placate the most extreme radical thinkers of the right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, what?
Well, no, I mean, if you, you know, look at, you know, he accused Sidney Blumenthal of beating his wife.
No.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And he said in the report there were court records to that effect. But then several days later, he had to retract the whole thing.
But you know what's scary about that is that, like, okay, so he had to retract it. This is the way framing works, and the Republicans use this all the time. It's something George Lakoff talks about in his book, is that once you put that frame out there, once you put the dominant focus frame out there, bang, this guy beat his wife. Boom. Yeah. That's out there. So that's going to absorb into that part of the simple part of the human brain that wants to hold that. Because it's violent, it's decisive, it's pointed, it's a frame. So now when he retracts it, it doesn't matter. It's only going to erase the frame and maybe, you know, one third of the people that have it in their head. It's always going to be like, I heard he did that. He didn't even, he had to retract it. Oh, I don't know.
I never saw the retraction. Hey, look, it's the same thing that whoever it was that did it, I think it was Karl Rove, did to John McCain.
Yes.
About having a, quote, illegitimate black child who turned out to be a child, I believe, from Bangladesh who he adopted.
And the reason why the left has a harder time framing things is they're a little more broad thinking. It's sort of like, hey, he might have done that, but we don't know if he did it. We're going to wait and see if there's any proof, and then we'll flesh it out later. It's like, what was that? That nothing was said. But yeah. In terms of we're getting a little better. We have to reframe what they do, though. We're in sort of a reactionary mode, which makes it a little difficult to have the dominant frame in culture. But we're going to get it back.
Let's hope.
And unfortunately, folks, it's that time of week again when we hear Morning Sedition. Take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Wow. Wow. Save that for the mic. Good for you.
Morning, guys.
Hey, how are you, Mort?
Right.
You all right?
Morning, Riley. What are you reading? Old West magazine?
No, man.
No, there's a radio show.
No, this is Jim Merle's autobiography, I believe.
Alastair Cameron, developer of the giant impact theory. Alastair Cameron, the astrophysicist who developed the theory that the moon was formed billions of years ago after a planet collided with Earth, died 7 weeks ago after a chunk of arterial plaque collided with his heart. Yeah. Published in 1976, his giant impact theory was at first ridiculed until it was overshadowed by Elton John teaming up with Kiki D.
It was a rough year.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Cameron's giant impact theory held that the moon was created after an object the size of Mars struck Earth, sending a ring of rubble into space that eventually formed the moon and parts of the Bronx. not a pretty city.
Yeah.
You know, you've been there, right? You're a property there, right, Riley?
Hey, don't mock the Bronx.
All right, we don't have time for you, right? Obsessed with unraveling the secrets of the universe, Cameron also devised a theory explaining how large dying stars appear to create new stars as they explode. This theory also explained the career of Lisa Marie Presley.
Okay. Yeah. You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
You want to blow your nose?
You have a tissue?
Yeah, I do. Why don't you take care of that, because it sounded a little stuffed up.
We left those kind of tissues back in the old studio.
These are the only ones they're giving me now here.
The Kevlar tissues?
Getting rougher every week.
Yeah.
Cameron requested his body be hurled at light speed into Paul Sorvino.
Oh, no. Who else died?
French-American sculptor Armand Fernandez Armand.
Ah.
Armand Fernandez Armand, the nouveau realist artist who achieved fame by assembling sculptures out of everyday objects, died recently after soldering his pacemaker to a cheese grater and calling it, "Help, I just soldered my pacemaker to a cheese grater." Armand first got the idea to start making his sculptures out of burned and mangled objects after seeing someone react to one by burning and mangling it. Here's an interesting note. In one 1959 exhibit, the controversial artist filled a Paris gallery with rubbish, causing a scandal, while at the same time creating the world's largest repository of Jerry Lewis films.
That's what started it all.
Yes, I know. His use of discarded objects and old junk was the inspiration for many great artists, as well as the comedy of Carrot Top.
Yeah, of course.
Could have done without that one.
You can't cross him out after the fact. Yeah, really. Doesn't erase it.
Done already.
Plus, it's a visual. You can't see that on radio.
Yeah, I know. But you went ahead and do it just to make yourself feel better, I guess.
Look, if you can't make yourself feel better, well, who can you make feel better?
Not me.
Wow.
Right.
It's getting rough. It's getting philosophical in here.
Can I get on with this?
Yeah,
now?
I think so. Go ahead.
At one point, he reportedly had more recycled garbage than NBC's fall lineup. Friends say Armand devoted the last years of his life trying to dig himself out of the world's biggest pile of crap. Armand requested his remains be cut apart, cremated, and then cleverly reattached atop a pedestal with a broken violin.
Nice.
That's all the garbage references I can dream up right now.
You know what's exciting about these days on this show, Jim? Neither you or I know what's really going to happen to our sanity on any given day because of the stress we're under and the impending doom of our future. And I got to tell you something, I look forward to it. I look forward to every Jim Oliver piece to the point where I'm like, Brendan, let's just make sure that parts of it are understandable as we enter into it.
You think I'm going to crack. You think I'm a walking time bomb, don't you?
Yeah, I do, man.
Well, you know what? You're right.
I'm glad I got good instincts on that. Do you want to do the last line of this sketch?
Sure. Yeah. This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions? what day is this, Monday?
Now, let's talk about it in a minute. 47 past, we got Jim Walcott coming up. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
One past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Our guest is a frequent guest on our show. He's a champion of Morning Sedition. He is a contributing editor of Vanity Fair and the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, A Looting of the News in a Time of Terror. You can check out his musings on his blog, www.jameswalcott.com. Right now, though, James Walcott joins us in the studio. How are you, Jim?
Pretty good. Pretty good, Jim.
Nice to see you. Before we get started talking, thank you for that wonderful post of support that you did last week. It mobilized a lot of... At jameswalcott.com. It mobilized a lot of people to email our CEO, but I don't know that he reads any of them. But nonetheless... It was great, and I appreciate that. So, moving on, what do you make of, how do you like this whole thing that now Bush is sort of admitting guilt to not saying, hey, there's no weapons of mass destruction, but the Democrats voted for the war as well?
Mm-hmm.
That he's trying to reframe this whole thing as sort of like, we're all in it together crap.
Yeah, it's really not going to work. I mean, it, because for one thing, it's like people expect something higher from the president,
mm-hmm.
and they don't, and so to say, well, I was, fooled by the bad intel, but so was everybody else. I mean, that's not really a great argument to make. And the thing is, you're in a bad spot when 3 years into the war, you're still arguing over how you got into the war. Because when you think of other wars, no one says, well, how exactly did we get into this? And in fact, it's a sign of a bad war because, during Vietnam, there were still people going, did something really happen at Tonkin Gulf? Tonkin Gulf? And so when you're arguing that, that's a bad position to be arguing from. That means that things are really not moving well.
Well, things aren't moving well, but it seems as though Bush has at least gotten some kind of a marginal plan to extricate himself from the current problem. One is, of course, to leave the country because he's in Asia for the better part of this week. But the other is to leave whoever they got behind, Hadley or whoever, to make this argument that the Democrats are being unfair to the country when they criticize the run-up to the war. Do you think and particularly they fall back again on the service people. You're being unfair to the men and women whose lives are on the line. That usually will work in this country, won't it?
I don't know. I remember when you pass a certain point, because I remember during Vietnam, that was all used all during Vietnam against the anti-war movement and against anybody who spoke against the Vietnam War. And it did work for a long time, but it tended to work earlier when people actually thought there was a chance for victory. I think by and large, American people now, they kind of want out. And also, there aren't the really great hate figures, because, you know, I mean, I can remember during Vietnam, they would, like, point out people like, you know, Senator Fulbright or people like that. When I hear them attacking Nancy Pelosi, you know, it's like, first of all, most Americans have no idea who Nancy Pelosi is. And, you know, she's the Democratic leader in the House, but she's not particularly anti-war.
Right.
And so what they had to do is they have to go back and, like, bring up Michael Moore again or people like that. It's going to be harder to demagogue this, because I think the American people have largely reached a decision of it's really not working.
Well, I'll tell you, it seems that 57% believe he deliberately misled the people to make a case for war. Mm-hmm. And I think that also what you're saying, we had a little conversation earlier today about what the anti-war movement is really about in terms of the evolution of it since Vietnam, is that it did do something. Mm-hmm. It changed the entire face of culture in the face of the Vietnam War. The anti-war movement changed mm-hmm. everything. And also a lot of the stuff that it provoked didn't really become, you know, revealed until decades later. Mm-hmm. And what's happening now, because of you and because of people out in the blog world and because of the way information gets around now, is that people have access to information immediately. And the fact that 57% of this country believes that they were misled by the president is great. And I think that the facts that the intelligence was manipulated mm-hmm. is out there. These are facts that people can get now very quickly.
Well, I mean, the fascinating thing is that we don't even have a mass anti-war movement the way we did during Vietnam. We don't really have anything. In fact, we had, for a brief flurry, we had Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan.
But you don't see Cindy Sheehan now. I mean, it's funny how the American people sort of reached this conclusion. They reached it slowly, slower than the rest of us might have liked, mm-hmm. given the election. But they came to it sort of on their own, because it's not like when you turn on the TV, they're, you know, like all the, like, cable news hosts are saying, my God, how could we have been, you know, there might be a few, but no, it's amazing. This has all happened without, like, a big mobilization and marches and all that stuff. You don't really see that many, like, anti-war posters or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are some people, Jim, who are going to say that the country forgave Ronald Reagan for Iran-Contra and they might forgive George Bush for Iraq. Bad analogy?
I don't think that, see, the thing is with Reagan did keep sort of that sunny disposition, you know, I mean, it annoyed a lot, it frustrated Democrats, but he did seem to sort of float above it all. I thought Bush made a huge mistake using Veterans Day for, like, Veterans Day is the day I'm going to come back out swinging.
And this is a guy that doesn't even go to military funerals. Let's take a few minutes here and regroup, and we'll come back and finish this conversation, because I want to talk more about this. I also want to talk a little bit about whether or not the Republican echo chamber is starting to fragment. Can we address that?
Sure.
All right, it's 57 past. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Our guest is James Walcott. His website is www.jameswalcott.com.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Sitting here with us is our guest, contributing editor of Vanity Fair and the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, The Looting of the News in a Time of Terror. Jim Walcott is here. So you can see his stuff. He has a daily posting at least, right? You post every day over there, Jim?
Well, I try, but sometimes it's like sporadic, two or three in one day, and then you skip a day.
www.jameswalcott.com. You can go check that out. We're having a conversation about the Republican echo chamber and its effect on culture, and whether, because we were just talking about Drudge and how he is basically has been integrated into the world of journalism, mm-hmm. that he can actually dictate a bit of any given day's news day if some of his stories have teeth. But for the most part, he's just a slandering gossip columnist who is a right wing ideologue and used as such. Yes.
Although I don't think I think his glory day is done. I think it was. I think Monica, when he was getting fed all this stuff, and you know, a lot of it was false, but it was good sensationalism. But he was getting a lot of leaks out of the Monica Gate thing. I think he made a real mistake so aligning himself with the right, because during the Bush administration, I mean, it's hard for me to think of like what big things he's broken. I mean, he hasn't broken anything about them.
Right.
I mean, you know, the whole Judy Miller stuff, all that stuff, you'd have to go to the Huffington Post to get anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, have you ever heard him on radio?
No.
I mean, it is the utter incoherence. I mean, it's sort of like this weird babble. I mean,
does he still have his own show?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it like in cabs.
But isn't
he
sort of a
Sunday nights, he still is on.
Isn't he sort of a forager, though? I can't see him as being somebody that has a point of view necessarily, does he? I mean, his website is clearly way to the right and is pandering to right-wing people, but what does it take to just, run through the press and find stuff that adheres to
your
point of view?
He has a right-wing point of view, but he doesn't have it nailed down the way everybody else does at WABC, where they come in and it's like the same 5 points they hit. No, he just kind of babbles, but I don't know. I mean, there's something so almost antique now about the whole fedora, his whole shtick.
Right.
I mean,
the Walter
Winchell
thing.
He needs to make a comeback tour.
That's exactly what I was thinking, that he tried to, with the fedora and the persona,
do a
Walter Winchell thing. And Winchell did successfully straddle journalism and gossip for a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm. And Winchell was, of course, a big smear artist.
Yeah, he was.
Do you think there's any indication that right-wing sort of blog, propaganda machine is starting to fall? We had Mary Mason here last week to talk about that whole the memo gate thing and the way they took down Dan Rather, and it all started out there on the blog. Do you think that their power is diminishing at all from what your experience is?
I do think that they're going after each other a bit, which is great fun. I mean, because, I came out of the Village Voice, and I just assumed it was only people on the left who hated each other. You know, sure, he's against the war, but where is he on the feminist issues or the gay issues or divide or something? You know, that kind of factionalism. But one of the things you're seeing now is a lot of the kind of neocon types are now realizing we're not that comfortable with the religious right. We formed an alliance with them. Bush kind of kept an alliance, but now they're kind of looking and saying, wait a minute, do we really want James Dobson and people like that, having that much influence? And you really saw with the Harriet Myers nomination, because you had certain bloggers who were just like pushing for her really hard, like Hugh Hewitt and people like that. And then other people, most of the right, like the National Review Online, they were against her. Now they're going at each other a lot.
Well, that's happening in the Congress and in the Senate as well. I mean, they're starting to freak out because the stink of Bush is becoming a negative thing. I mean, we saw that last week in those elections in Virginia. That was a beautiful thing to have the president go down there and not be able to do anything but be a liability to Kilgore.
You've got somebody as basically spineless as Rick Santorum, like saying, well, I don't really, I think I'm going to not be there when Bush comes in, I'm going to be somewhere else. I mean, that's a really bad sign.
Well, Jim, where do you see these blog, the conservative bloggers and the Matt Drudges going next year when there's an off-year election going on? And when the stakes would appear to be pretty high, I mean, I've been seeing some pieces that say, on the one hand, everything from the Democrats can retake both houses of Congress to other pieces that say, well, the Republicans have done such a great job at redistricting in most states, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Where will this conservative blogosphere be in the run-up to the 2006 elections, in your judgment?
Well, they're going to be going for their guys, but what they tend to do is they tend to, cluster around one big issue or one hate figure that they can try to take down.
Right.
So it may be that they won't spread out in terms of the whole midterm. It may be there may be one Democratic candidate that they say this guy is beyond the pale or this woman is beyond the pale and we've got to take them down. Or it may be a media figure.
Uh-huh.
But I think they're going to be very fragmented. Also, there are other things going on this Jack Abramoff, all these investigations.
Exactly. How can they take down anyone when they're falling apart from the inside? They're crumbling inside.
A lot of these people are going to be having to defend. I mean, one of the things I've noticed is there's been a complete dropout of, you're not hearing anybody say, well, we've got to really defend Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay is our guy.
Exactly.
When he was first indicted, they were doing that. Now it's more stuff is coming out, and it's Well, maybe we're going to have to write delay off.
Well, that's the thing. Delay, Frist, and Scooter, and now, you know, Karl Rove is still under investigation, mm-hmm. and Cheney might be implicated in all this.
Yeah, and the latest in the Abramoff thing is Senator John Cornyn, who's like, as somebody said, is the senator from Bush, the state of Bush.
He might be connected, too?
Yeah.
Oh, this is genius, because that was the great thing about the Abramoff investigation, is that the entire Senate and the entire Congress, if the Republicans and maybe even a couple Democrats, could get sucked into this thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, apparently the latest is it has to do with these Indian gambling things.
Sure.
And Corin has been dragged in, and you got Norquist dragged in. Ralph Reed has been dragged. I mean, the more
he's at the center of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's like this wonderful treasure trove of emails that just keep, all of a sudden keep leaking out.
Well, you know what kills me about this?
What?
There's all this piety, okay? Yeah. Ralph Reed and all that. And they're talking about gambling here.
I know.
You're talking about losing your shirt and coming back in a wheelbarrow with suspenders here.
Well, and the other thing is, in the emails that come out, it is a real contempt for the religious fundamentalists who support them. Because they say things like, well, we'll be able to take this to play to, our people. We'll be able to convince them that we actually did something good for them for closing down this casino, when in fact it's because they were getting paid by a rival. But we'll tell our people, like, well, we saved your community from the sin of gambling.
It's interesting how the religious right is willing to be used for. It's that, they will cut them loose, as you said, because they know that, despite what anyone thinks, they are not the majority of this country. They're not the majority of the right wing. They are a vocal group, but they don't determine elections. I don't necessarily believe that, but they do know that the leaders of the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigades know that they can, if they decide to detach politically or reattach, they can bring these 20 million or 22 million people with them at the drop of a hat, just saying, well, God's changed his mind.
Yeah, well, see, I think what they're really scared about now is maybe these people won't show up for the midterm elections. I mean, Rove did manage to get out, they worked the whole Christian right thing and got them out for the election. They may not be able to get them out from the midterms, because they may be very disillusioned with Bush and very disillusioned, period. And all they have to do is stay home,
And that's it. The midterms are important because it's even less people showing up in general.
Yeah, it's generally less, and it's very hard to mobilize people for midterms.
Quick question, Jim. Mm-hmm. Now, we saw what happened to Kilgore in Virginia when Bush decided to campaign with him.
Yeah.
How many people running for re-election in this country next year will be looking for a little bit of that presidential oomph?
Well, that's going to be very interesting.
Nobody.
Yeah, negative. Because, even, who's it, J.D. Hayworth, who's one of those real, he's one of those guys who sounds like he should be on, right-wing talk radio. He has said, well, I don't think I would want Bush to, And I thought, boy, when somebody like that does it, I mean, it's going to be very, I mean, what Bush may do is he may go to the periphery to raise money rather than, rather than stand on the
not
stage.
Not going on the stump.
Yeah, not stand on the stage. But, here's the thing about Bush is they clearly don't want him in Washington, because he clearly doesn't know what to do when Washington gets restless. I mean, that's why I'm convinced they had him on the Social Security tour. Keep him on the road. Let Cheney run everything from Washington, And so they've got to send Bush somewhere. He's got to, because it's like, he seems to get restless in the White House.
But the thing is with Cheney, too, now, is that, given that I was talking about this last week, and maybe we should continue this conversation for a couple minutes. Yeah. Well, because we got a couple of calls here, too. You got to be somewhere for breakfast?
No, I'm fine.
All right, so why don't you hang out for a minute? Because it seems that most people, as much as they may dislike Bush, they hate Cheney even more.
Oh, yeah.
Yet everybody, and both of us, Republicans and Democrats, both know that he's running the country, so it just means that the overall picture is that there must be really for this administration about an 80% disapproval.
Mm-hmm.
Their approval ratings are really in the low 20s if you were to average Cheney and Bush together. So the whole thing is frightening. But there's a couple phone calls, and it seems like we have more to talk about, because I want to ask you also about this ruling in the Senate to deny Gitmo detainees any sort of legal representation in the courts, because we have some Democrats who voted for that, obviously. I want to talk a little bit about Lieberman and what in that type of Democrat. And is there any hope of getting Democrats unified on a platform to actually win? 16 past, our guest Jim Wolcott, he will stay with us, so stay here. It's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
21 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That interesting sound you hear is singer-songwriter Langhorne Slim. This guy, it's a very unique mixture of bluegrass and steel drums. It's in his weird voice. Look, this is one of those rare sort of situations where we get CDs in the mail constantly. You know, people soliciting artists they represent, labels representing, and people that are doing it in their basement, usually political parody songs. We don't do any parody songs, but for some reason, this one stood out to me. Banjo, wasn't it? And he stood out to me, and I listened to it, and I'm like, I've never heard anything quite like this, and we have him on. He's going to be on. He's actually playing at the Knitting Factory. That's going to be coming up. I got it right in front of me. Tonight, he'll be at the Knitting Factory. We're going to give away tickets in a little while, but we're going to have him on to do some of that weird neo-country jamming, neo-bluegrass kind of, I don't even know what you'd call it. We'll have to ask him. We're still sitting here with Jim Walcott because we like him. His website is www.jameswalcott.com. He's a contributing editor over at Vanity Fair and, of course, the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants. So let's talk a little bit about what happened in the Senate in terms of denying detainees at Gitmo any sort of legal representation within the American legal system, which I think, and Riley and mm-hmm. I have talked about before, is a mistake if we have faith mm-hmm. in this system. But you get a lot of Democrats, and you know what? Let's take this call real quick because I think this will lead us to where I want to go. Sanchez, a regular caller from Los Angeles. How are you, Sanchez?
What's up, man?
Quite well. How are you guys doing this morning?
I'm all pretty right. good, man. So what's on your mind about the Democrats?
Well, can I use a Rocky movie analogy for the sake of clarity here? You know, I think it's Rocky II where he finally gets Apollo Creed and knocks him out?
Yeah.
Okay. On that very first punch where he gets him, let's use the analogy of Cindy Sheehan.
Okay.
And then, like, the hurricanes, both Katrina and Wilma, we've got the indictments, both of... and the investigation of Frist and all this other stuff that's been going on, one punch after another. But you know the problem of all of this is?
What?
Take Rocky out of the picture. It's been a call Apollo Creed punching himself. I don't see any strong leadership on the Democrat side that really makes me feel comfortable or confident enough to go, yeah, you know?
All right.
I don't see that happening.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Sanchez. Sure. Let's address that because I think he's right because, you know, you get the Democrats like Lieberman, you get the Centrocrats. What do you think of the chances of someone standing up, Jim Walcott?
Well, I think it's going to happen, but I think one of the things Democrats are doing, and I'm not sure it's totally dumb on their part, is they're letting the Republicans beat each other up and go down in the polls. You know, yesterday Tim Russert was really trying to browbeat, you know, because he browbeats all his guests, Democrats,
sure,
you know. He's trying to get Howard Dean to say, well, what are the Democrats going to stand for? What are they going to be their specific policies? And Dean was saying, well, you know, we're going to unveil those soon, but he meant 06. And I thought, well, Dean is actually perfectly right, because the fact is, what is the point of bringing out anything now? Is Americans are going into the holiday season. That's all they're going to be thinking about. Once, you know, we got Thanksgiving next week. So you might as well wait till the new year. But if the Republicans are going to take themselves down, I don't think the Democrats could afford to wait too much into 2006.
Sure.
Because they've got to be able to say, okay, in effect, look what the Republicans have brought you. Look at the mess they brought you. Here's what we're going to do to clean it up. They can't simply keep pointing to the mess and saying, look what they did.
Yeah, or you can't run on like, hey, at least we're not them.
That would work for a while, but no, they're going to have to come up with something. But, you know, part of it is some of the people who are the major figures in Democratic Party are just such blowhards. I mean, frankly, I cringe whenever Joe Biden is on the air because I don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. I mean, when Joe Biden had the nerve to say, well, I think we should give Alito an up or down vote before we've had anything, I mean, Biden almost on his own took the filibuster off the table.
Right.
Which was an incredibly dumb thing to do. And I bet you Harry Reid probably hit the roof when he saw that.
Right.
You know, it's gonna be hard. But I don't really blame the Democrats that much now for holding back.
But couldn't the Democrats at some point, Jim, you know, help their own case by getting behind some kind of initiative that might have the effect of hurting a few Democrats? I think a lot of people in the American body politic want to see the parties act in the best interest mm-hmm. of the people and not necessarily the party.
Well, I think the Democrats should get behind things even that if they know they're going to fail because they don't have the votes. But, you know, you start putting stuff up that you can then run on later and say, we tried to bring you this, But the Republican majority wouldn't let us do it. They, they've got to craft those things.
Let's let Joey in Atlanta quickly make your point, Joey.
Hey, Joey.
Yeah, just a quick point. Back in 1993, 1 year before the quote-unquote Republican Revolution, the Republicans weren't throwing any knockout punches at the Democrats. They were standing back and letting the Democrats knock themselves out. And when they finally saw the Democrats teetering, that's when they jumped in with all their strong, quote-unquote, strong leadership.
All right. Gotcha. Thanks, Joey. So that's a good point. Well, this is a political tactic.
I wouldn't be surprised, for example, in Hillary Clinton's case, if Hillary's going to wait until, like, the right moment when she can, like, push Bush over. The thing. Let the other people like soften Bush up, and then she'll come in. You know.
Yeah, I think you're. I hope you're right. I hope someone pushes him over. It's Jim Walcott, contributing editor of Vanity Fair, author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants. Thanks for being here. It's great seeing you, and thanks again for the piece you wrote for us on the blog www.jameswalcott.com. We'll see you soon. Coming up is what you hear right now: the very peculiar hillbilly bluegrass music of Langhorne Slim. 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. What you hear on Air America's Morning Sedition right now? I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey,
is Langhorne Slim, singer-songwriter out of. Out of Brooklyn, Chinatown now. We're going to talk to him about where he's from and what his name means in just a second. I do want to say this again. An announcement is imminent about the future of mornings here. I read that in the New York Times on Air America Radio. I don't know what my part in it's going to be, but whatever it may be or whatever it may not be, you can go to markmaron.com and get on my mailing list to find out what I will be doing either way. That should all be coming down this week, my friends. So right now, our next guest's debut album, When the Sun's Gone Down, released early this year. Tonight he'll be playing the Knitting Factory in New York City with Nathaniel Mayer, who's an old R&B guy. We're going to be giving away one pair of tickets to see him play, so stick around for that. Right now, though, please welcome Langhorne Slim to Morning's Edition. Good morning there, Langhorne.
Good evening, my friend.
Is it evening for you?
Yeah,
it's a little early. I must say I'm not too accustomed of
Waking up
this early, yes.
I like that you put the hat on, though, for the radio show. That's important.
I sleep with the hat on. It's always on.
The hat's the trademark. So, yeah, I listen to your music. As I told the listeners earlier, your record company guys sent an unsolicited CD, and I rarely listen to them, but something about your name and about what was hoped to be inside sort of appealed to me, and I played it, and it was very unique. Where are you drawing most of your sound from there?
Geez, I don't know.
But it's a unique type of bluegrass, I would say, right?
I guess it's sort of like twisted kind of bluegrass kind of a thing. Where I grew up in Langhorne, which you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I kept myself fairly isolated from...
Right, like from anybody?
I had a dog, a cat, my mom. I had a girlfriend in high school, but other than that... I was fairly isolated. So maybe that, I sort of came up with some kind of...
Did you listen to bluegrass?
I did sort of in high school. I started listening to bluegrass.
All right.
Were you isolated because you wanted to get out?
Probably.
I know the feeling.
I just didn't feel connected to the rest of the Langhorne.
I know. I grew up in a small town in Connecticut and felt the same way until I got to be 17, graduated high school, and never lived there permanently again.
Exactly.
Where is Langhorne?
Pennsylvania, man.
Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Okay, all right. So Pennsylvania, that's a huge, weird state.
It is a huge and crazy state.
Hey, and I remember driving through Pennsylvania, just sign after sign for Anderson's Pea Soup. What is that? Does anyone know what that is?
Mark,
you know what I'm talking about?
No.
You didn't see it? It's like right on the highway. You drive through it, some sort of, all right, well, maybe I... Maybe
Scrapple. Did you see any signs for Scrapple?
Sure.
Because there's a lot of that in Pennsylvania, I tell you.
So now, a lot of people may not have heard of you, because I certainly hadn't when I saw your record, but you've been in Europe, and Europe has a way of defining people's careers. Do you have a big following in Europe?
I wouldn't say big, but more than I do in America, it seems.
Really? Like where?
I went to Italy for the first time. In Italy, I was surprised to see people were singing along with the songs and everything like that.
That must be so amazing.
It was very surreal, man. It was incredible. Like,
really? They were singing along with Langhorne Slim songs?
They were singing along with Langhorne. Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh, that's it. Where in Italy was this?
I was from Catania to Bologna. We played 10 shows there, some places that I've never even heard of before. We were in Rome.
Oh, that's Florence. Thrilling, man.
It was incredible.
So, all right. So, what you want to play a couple songs?
I'd love to.
I hear you have a song that might be kind of appropriate. Is that true? Maybe do you have a song in mind?
I do. I'm not sure what it says there.
No, you can sing whatever you want.
All right. Well, this is a song about a girl. I don't know if that's appropriate.
Of course, okay. It's appropriate.
All right, here we go.
There's a story I've heard told. Comes from the banks where the odd sailboat goes. I don't know if it's true, but I'd say so. Surely in it you will recognize somebody that you know. There was a gal in New Orleans. She could be sweet, but people, she could be mean. Really, with her, there was very little in between. She'd kiss gentlemen's lips beneath the sweet olive trees. They never knew their woman. She never knew her man. I wanna know my woman. Want her to know her man. When you know too many people, your heart's bound to go bad. Ah, darling, don't be bad on me now, please. One dude she knew got sick with hurt. His baby's filth and dirt. So he hid a .22 beneath his shirt and went to pay her a visit at the place in which she worked. My friends, if you find someone you love a lot, I'd recommend you give it everything you got. Either way, you'll be sitting pissing in a pot. But at least it will be with someone you love and you trust. Nobody knows their woman. Nobody knows their man. I die to know my woman. Kill for her to know her man. Just wanted to get beyond the initial shaking of my own sweaty, nervous hand. Or else I might consider being bad.
That was great. Langhorne Swim is our guest. The album is When the Sun's Gone Down. Listen, you got a whole bunch of people in the booth clapping. Wow, yeah. That was some great singer-songwriting kind of stuff, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yes. I'm not sure if you mean that in a good way or bad
No,
way,
I mean it in a great way because I'm just watching this documentary at home on Townes Van Zandt.
Yeah,
we're thinking about having the director on. And the flat-picking thing is great. I mean, you're a good flat-picker. There's a real trick to that, man. That sounds great. So you're going to be playing at the Knitting Factory tonight. That's tonight in November 14th with Nathaniel Mayer. We're going to be giving away tickets for that. Should we have callers do it now or no? We'll wait. All right. Also, you're going to be playing at the Tin Angel in Philadelphia on Friday night. Yeah. How do people get your CD? Is it hard to get?
Not too hard to get. You can get it from narnack.com, which is
the record label. NARNACK.
Right.
Dot
or you
com.
Can get it at Virgin or Tower.
At a regular record store if you want to go ahead
there
and
go
shopping. The song that I was told might be good for returning troops by some of the press people that represent you is Checking Out.
Yeah, well.
What?
Those press people. I mean, I just wrote a song, you know, it's not...
it's not about that. No, I'm not trying to play it.
I mean, I'd be happy to play that song.
If you want to, this was some... Sure. Theme that they said, but it's not something
right.
That
I think they were just trying to get me on the show, but now that I'm here, it's
yeah.
You know what, I'll play what I want.
You can play whatever you want.
No, I'll be happy to play, man.
Okay, let's have it.
All right, cool.
Sometimes
Sometimes I don't recognize, sometimes I don't recognize the house I live in or the street that my house is on. Sometimes I don't recognize, sometimes I don't recognize the patterns on my shirts, the way my shoes are tied. We know the way things go down, we know a lot of people, the people in a small town. We know a lot of people, we know the way things go down. Sometimes I don't recognize, that leads me to be surprised. On my way home, I'm walking home for the first time. Sometimes I don't sympathize with all the sick and the tired. What's in it being a bum? What's in it being admired? Some streets go up, some go down, and it's just too much trouble. We know the smells and the sounds, we know a lot of people. We know the way things go down. Well, I can fight like the devil, I can do what I'm told, but one of these days, baby, I got to hit the road on my way home. I'm going home, that's where I'm going. I'm going home, walking home, that's where I'm going. Sometimes I don't recognize, sometimes I don't recognize the house I live in or the street that my house is on. Sometimes I don't sympathize with all the sick and the tired. What's in it being a bum? What's in it being admired? Some streets go up, some go down. Well, it's just too much trouble. We know the smells and the sounds. We pass a lot of people. We know the way things go down. Well, we can fight like the devil, we can do what we're told, but one of these days, baby, I got to hit the road on my way home. I'm going home, that's where I'm going. I'm coming home, that's where I'm going. I'm coming home, that's where I'm going. I'm walking home, coming home, that's where I'm going. I'm coming home.
All right. Man, you're like the real deal, buddy. You sound good, man. Sounds great, you know. It's hard to do the singer-songwriter thing and have sort of a unique approach to it, but your voice is unique and your phrasing's unique, and it sounds great, and you're a good flat picker. So what did inspire you to write that?
Actually, I didn't write it.
You didn't?
No. Okay. A friend of mine named James. I wrote the words to it. At least most
okay.
Of the
well,
ones
you co-wrote it. Yeah.
He wrote the song, and this is a friend of mine named James Jackson Tote.
Okay.
Who I went on tour with, and I thought that song was great.
It is a great song, and it really captures what singer-songwriters have to do in their life. Because I spent years as a comic, and there's a weird thing about, and they were talking about, Chris Christopherson was talking about it in that Townes Van Zandt film, that you basically commit to this life that has no security whatsoever, that has none of the trappings of anyone else's life, just so you can, find your own voice and do your own thing and have the freedom of mind to do so. And yeah, it's an amazing commitment to make, and it's rare when it would pays off. But you sound great.
Thank you very much.
You bet. So we're taking the first caller in the New York area to win tickets to see Langhorne Swim tonight, Monday, November 14th, at the Knitting Factory with Nathaniel Mayer. If you're interested in seeing that, there, give us a call.
Yeah, 866-303-2270 for those of you who might not know the number.
And then the album, Langhorne Swim's album, When the Sun's Gone Down, is available at your favorite record store. You can go to narnak.com. Is that what it is?
Narnak.
Thanks for being with us, man. Have a good show tonight.
Thanks a lot, man.
Take a nap.
Appreciate it. Yeah, right.
46 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hey, at 51 past the hour. It's Land This Thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Congratulations, Fran, for winning tickets to see Langhorne Swim tonight at the Knitting Factory. She's in New Jersey, Fran is. This is Morning Sedition. I just got an email from somebody. Sorry to bother you, but what is the name of that music group from Australia who came and sang those amazing songs, including Be Good to Your Mama? That was John Butler, who we had on months and months ago. This is a weird thing, is that some people are like, hey, why are they putting music on? This is a political talk show. But other people are like, this is great, man. This is a well-varietied show, and they learn about new artists and new singers. And that was from months ago, and that guy jammed. Do you remember what we had to do to set that up? Hey, Don Pushman is here. Don Pushman.
You don't recognize the laugh.
Yeah, is known as Dan Pashman on the Randy Road Show, but around the office here, he's Don Pushman.
That's me.
Yeah. The reason he's here is because earlier in the show, I talked about an argument I had with a woman whose parents are Russian immigrants who was dating a friend of mine that I didn't know when I had the argument. And basically, it was, Dan, that she was saying that President Bush is doing a great job. And I said, no, it seems like the tide is turning against him. Like 57% of the people think he lied about intelligence. His approval ratings are about 35%. She's like, 35%, that's not bad for a wartime president. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she basically kept saying that. And I said, well, what about, you know, Scooter Libby? What about all indications of the facts that lead to the that he manufactured intelligence with the White House Iraq group? And she just says, no, we're just going to have to different opinion. We're just going to have different opinion. And I'm like, it wasn't an opinion. Not only did she not know what she was talking about, but her commitment was this blind sort of belief in the president. I called her stupid, and I got, and eventually the guy who was my friend who was going out with her, they broke up that night after having an argument about politics. But you,
well, good. I think you did your friend a great service.
That's what he said. So, but you actually have an explanation for this, because your future in-laws are.
I think so, and I would not necessarily put my future in-laws entirely in the group of this woman you talked to. They think for themselves. They do tend to be a little conservative, I think. But they're not knee-jerk lemmings.
Right. You know,
they have their own independent opinions, and they don't follow Bush over the cliff.
But they are from another country.
They are immigrants. They grew up in Czechoslovakia. They fled the communist Czechoslovakia during the Prague Spring of 1968.
Yeah.
Eventually made their way to America. And they are wonderful people. You know, I like them a lot. I've got to make sure I throw that out there. But my explanation is basically this, which is a lot, and there are a lot of immigrants out there that have this attitude, which is, look, I came here with nothing. I worked my way up. Why can't everyone else?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And there is some validity to that. I mean, they did come here with nothing. They barely spoke English, and they came here. They learned the language. They got themselves educated. They worked their butts off. Now they have a nice house in the suburbs, et cetera, et cetera.
But I see how that applies to being wrong-headed about social programs and about issues around poverty or welfare. But I don't see how that plays into supporting a war that is clearly based on lies.
Well, that's a tough one. You know,
okay.
I would say that my in-laws also probably have reservations about the Iraq War, as I would think that any moral person would.
Right.
But I think another thing that plays in here, Mark, is people who came from communist countries.
Yes.
Still, as do many knee-jerk conservatives, buy into that notion that liberals are socialists or communists.
Right.
I mean, even, you know, Schwarzenegger pushed that forward in his speech at the Republican convention.
It's a silly button to push.
In the imaginary debates that I have with my in-laws,
because
I haven't actually debated politics with them.
And that's also a symptom of obsessive compulsive disorder, but go on.
Anyway. Hey, can I just go wash my hands? Yeah. I'll be right back.
Again? You just did it a second ago. All right.
But the point is, you know, the point I'd like to make to them is to draw parallels between communist regimes and the totalitarian aspects of the Bush regime.
How do you like that? Put that in your immigrant pipe and smoke it, former communist people. Well, thank you. Thank you, Dan Pashman.
I remember that sound.
Yes. Okay. Don Pushman. Look, it's that time. It's time for the liberal agenda. Here's the facts from the Streisand compound, giving us our daily marching orders, a weekly now. One, contact Warner Brothers. Make sure that no dragons or mermaids were harmed in the making of the new Harry Potter film. Two, before each showing of Chicken Little, require theaters to show a PSA explaining Bush's avian flu scare tactics, which will put billions into the pockets of big pharmaceutical firms for worthless vaccines. All right. Three, spend this Thanksgiving at an Indian casino giving back as much as you can. It's never too late to make things right. Here you go. Number four, write a science book for Kansas in which the intelligent designer is Bill Gates. At least that would explain the numerous software glitches in the universe. All right, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. So Bush thinks opponents of war are trying to rewrite history, huh? Wake up, sheeple. If we were really rewriting history, we'd be in the middle of Al Gore's second term, and Bush would be passed out under some bar in Galveston.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
So, Dan, how are things going on the Randy Rhoads show?
They're going well. They're going well.
Yes, he has to say that.
Did you think he was going to say they're going rotten?
I expected the truth, Riley. So here we go. So, Riley, I want to say again, happy anniversary to you
Thank
and Kim.
You very
happy
much.
Anniversary, Riley.
13 years. Lovely year.
Wow. I got to ask you what the president is after the show, and if I'm right. Do you want to make a bet right now?
What?
Can we make a bet that I'm right, that I know what it is? Maybe you buy me lunch?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Not today, though.
He was reluctant.
It's my anniversary.
He went through his head. He's like, he might know. Do I want to buy him lunch? Nah, yeah, okay. No, I'm not going to say what it is, but I will find out tomorrow. And who do we got on the show tomorrow?
Well, we've got Todd Ensign. We've got Anthony Bourdain. And we've got a little thing we like to call the liberal confessional.
Anthony Bourdain is that cook guy, right?
He's such a confidential guy.
Oh, he's a guy that's traveled to Russia and stuff. I like that guy. It's going to be good.
More food?
Yeah, I'm acting like I didn't know anything about it. I knew he was coming.
Surprise guest, right? A lot of fun today, Maren.
It was, Riley.
A lot of fun, Pashman.
Yo.
Air America Radio.